The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Welcome back to the Schmo Zone podcast. This is episode number 92. I'm Dave Schmolenson, aka The Schmo. My co-host is
Helen Yee with Helen Yee Sports.
And today's guest, he really needs no introduction. He's the one and only. He's the head coach of Extreme Couture and the heavyweight champion of the world, Francis Ngannou, Coach Eric Nixick, and by the way, Coach Dewey Cooper. Dewey Cooper, Black Cobra Striking Systems. He's going to be walking in here pretty soon. Thanks for joining us today.
He's got jump squats for being late, so you have to make him pay.
Yeah, we'll definitely hold him accountable.
Thanks for coming in today. I mean, it's my pleasure. This is Wednesday. It's your first day back in Vegas.
Yeah.
Is it kind of settling in now or what?
Yeah, we usually try to give a day or two to celebrate or to, you know, if you're sad or you're upset about it, but this with the complexity of camp and the way everything was, I was like, man, I need to take a couple of days off and chill. So I had already set aside, like, rented a little beach house in Newport. Already knew that, you know, win, lose, or draw, I was going to spend a couple of days with the fam. And I think that's the biggest thing for me is the reinvestment back into family when you have such a long, long camp and the time that's taken away from them throughout the camp. I just always feel it's important to kind of get back to that as well.
You're always so generous with your time, and you're everywhere, too.
Yeah.
We really appreciate you coming in, and, I mean, you don't skip a beat. You really don't take many days off.
I know.
Maybe Sundays, if that?
Like, Sundays, I usually kind of, for my day. So, I try to work out every day, but, like, Sundays is usually my day where it's like, hey, I'm going to get something done for me, you know, as far as production-wise goes, or if it's training or doing something on my own. And it's nice because I'll go to the gym, and there's no one there, and I can just go in and do whatever the hell I want. But yeah, you know, my dad always said, man, if it's important to you, you're going to find the time. So I just started, you know, cutting out most of the BS and just making sure I was getting my job done, whatever it had to be.
Well, speaking of BS, obviously the storylines are out there too. Everything coming at the camp, Francis's knee injury, and everyone talks about the contract dispute and everything like that with the UFC. But after getting this victory and the way Francis got the victory, it's got to be a big relief off your shoulders. You could finally breathe after everything going on, right?
Yeah, definitely. And you know, Coach, when Dewey gets here, we'll kind of laugh about the situation. But we get so worked up about stuff going on in camp. Him and myself, like, we wouldn't put that on to Francis. It'd be like mom and dad fighting and not fighting, but like, you know, talking business in the garage so the kids didn't hear about it, you know. But like me and dude, like, oh my god, like, fuck, you know, this shit, and what, you know, what else can happen, what else can go wrong? And then we would giggle. There was always be a point where we're like, but he's gonna go in there and knock this dude out, or he's gonna win this fight, we're gonna laugh about this later on, you know. So we always had that positive perspective spin on the end of it. But yeah, it wasn't the easiest camp by any means, but for me, like, I felt like it was something that we needed to define ourselves as coaches, as Francis being the fighter, but moreover, the champion. You know, I feel like to really be the champion, you're going to have to see some adversity, and you're going to have to learn how to fight through it, and that's what we were able to do.
How were you guys able to kind of manage all the outside noise going on and make sure that Francis was doing what he was supposed to do to get that W?
I think the outside noise is going to be inherent. You're going to hear and see, and a lot of the things with the backstory and buildup. But our job as coaches was not to add more to it and bring more drama and more to the table. So when you get guys like Dewey and myself, who are pretty no ego guys, we're not trying to steal spotlight or make it about us or make it more drama. You know, we just knew that, like, it already had a backstory and already had enough stuff. Like, let's not add more to that and focus in on what we need to do. And that was to beat Ciryl Gane. So that was the main thing, I think, for me, was just like, I don't want to add more bullshit to this. It's already enough going on, you know?
One thing that really stuck out to me, I remember the post-fight press conferences when Francis had that moment, that aha moment, like, oh, he's broken.
Yeah.
And I know you've talked about it too, where he felt, you felt like you had broken this guy too.
Yeah.
And you knew what that feeling was like when he had that first Stipe fight too.
Yeah.
You know, talk to us through, the audience through, like, in that type of moment, as that type of coach, like, what does that feel like when your guy is in control and you know you're going to walk out of here with the result that you've all been training for?
Well, we'll back up a little bit and just kind of Francis's build of his skill set and what he's been doing. You know,
Dewey's walking in here right now.
Hey, you got jump squats, bro.
Jump squats.
We're going to count them.
I was so stoked when I heard you were coming, though.
Hey, I want to hear that. I want to be here in four. She switched the schedule up.
What's up?
Chilling.
We're just talking trash about you.
Long time no see.
I think you got headsets over here, huh?
I think your headset's right to your left.
Hey, guys, we're supposed to be here at 4. 30 minutes makes a difference.
But we just started.
My daughter has a basketball game, and I was going to take her after the interview, but the 30 minutes made a difference, so I had to take her before. And driving to Liberty High School is a nightmare.
Oh, you're gone.
Appreciate you coming on.
You're talking about round three, essentially, kind of what we, what kind of happened, transpired, and everything else. But, you know, he's built this skill set over the last 2.5-3 years. And for us, I think that we always preach to him that we have to have a full MMA skill set. You have to have an off-speed pitch. If the only thing you have in your arsenal is a fastball, you know, eventually people are going to start timing it. So we need to have some other things in case we need to fall back on it. So, I mean, really credit to Francis for getting that wrestling, getting that cardio, getting everything in there. But we needed something to kind of sway the momentum, you know. My dad was saying football, like, get something to get the band playing. Sway the momentum back to your direction. And that was when Francis caught the kick, you know, had that very beautiful takedown. But it was like a big exclamation point, you know, the way he took him down, the way he slammed, and the way he was able to settle his weight on top. And then the round was over, and Ciryl was kind of in our backside corner, and Francis had a very short walk to get to the stool, whereas Ciryl kind of had to peel himself off the mat and then walk all the way across the mat, you know. So I was coming in with the stool with Coach Dewey, and I literally stood, like, in the middle of the octagon, and I yelled at Francis and pointed at Ciryl, and I was like, look at this motherfucker, he's fucking broke, look at him. And I wanted to say it loud enough that Ciryl heard us, that we identified that he was broken and he was tired, and I wanted Francis to hear it as well, to get him to feel that energy also. And we got Francis on the stool, and you can see he had a big old smile on his face, and I was like, hey, we're on to something right now, right? And he goes, yep, let's get back to it. So we knew right away, because of the way Ciryl was trying to get up, his answers to the ground game, that we now saw a clear path to victory. And that's what we said. We decided we're going to show more level change and feign our level change to scare him to get his hands to drop, throw the overhand, or attach to the legs, and let's get on these takedowns.
Ciryl did well the first two rounds, but unfortunately it's a 5-round fight. And like you said, after that big slam, Ciryl kind of was deflated. And Francis got that second and third win. He got excited. He got rejuvenated. And we knew the tide had changed for the better for us.
I know everybody's seen it, but the clip, right, what you were telling Francis and in between rounds.
Going into five?
Yeah, going into
five.
I mean, that's our flow, man. You know, I think him and I feed very well off each other in the corner. We've cornered numerous fighters together for numerous amount of years, and that's just reps. You know, he knows what I'm feeling. I know what he's feeling. You know, I try to set the stage in that position, pass it over to him, and then give one last little motivational piece. And, you know, somebody said, actually King Mo just wrote me just now, and he's like, dude, you and Dewey in the corner are like two snipers just picking off everything you need to do and touching and covering. It's remember, we can't give 10 pieces of information. He's never going to retain that. So I give a couple pieces, like two, and that's going to resonate with Francis. He's going to give two, and that's going to resonate. And then we give the motivational piece, and then it's done. So, I mean, dude, there's no other guy in the corner I like to work with. It's just we're able to flow off each other.
And you also had the champion Usman in his corner too. It wasn't the first time he's joined you guys. What was it like having him in the corner, and how elated was he when he saw all the wrestling, especially rounds 3, 4, and 5?
Usman was very happy. He was stressed like hell the first two rounds.
Stressing. We had to tell him to shut up a couple times.
we love Kamaru, But, you know, he was stressed because he loves Francis so much. And him and Francis are friends. We're friends with Francis also, but we're also his coaches. So we don't get too emotionally invested at those moments of it don't look too well. Usman was definitely starting to stress, but he's a champion. He wanted the best for Francis. He really wanted Francis to win. And when he started wrestling, Usman was really happy about that because he's seen that clear path to victory. So he settled down, and we all felt comfortable going into the fifth round because we all had it 2-2 going into the fifth, and we knew we had the momentum swing, and we just knew 5 minutes left, who wants this 5 minutes the most? We knew our guy had the gas like a lot of these fucking people. Where the camera at? Where the camera at? All you people talking about Francis will gas out. He don't have five in him. It came down to the last motherfucking 5 minutes, and you seen what happened.
And to your defense on the gas tank, when we would come to Extreme and we would watch him after practice, 40 minutes straight jump rope. Yeah. He wouldn't take a break.
Yes, yeah. 45 minutes at the
45.
End.
45, yeah. Okay.
I mean, we tailor, you've been to our pro practices, they're hard for a reason. And we make them that way because when they get in a fight, they already make a mental connection to, I've already been through worse, way worse. And that's the way it's by design. So come the fifth round, we can look at them and know there's sweat equity that we've left on the mats. It's not just two coaches yelling at you, telling you fucking whatever bullshit.
Yeah, go, 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 you when know, you haven't like, put that work in.
Yeah, bro, hey, I believe in you isn't like, it's not fucking bullshit. I believe in you because I've seen you fucking do it over and over and over again on Sicko Saturdays, on all of our practice days that we do. Like, bro, we're built for this shit, and let's go prove them wrong.
That's right. That's right. And a lot of people, I know I came in late, and I'm sure Eric already covered it, but I've been telling you people, Francis was a well-rounded mixed martial artist. Just because you knock people out all the time and because you're blessed with so much power doesn't mean you're not pounding the pavement and proving your skills. If improvement is possible, perfection is not good enough. Francis Ben knew how to wrestle. He Ben knew how to grapple. It's about time someone pulled it out of him to show it. And so we all expected him to out-grapple him, out-wrestle him, out-jitsu him, and out-strike him. That was our expectation going into the fight, regardless of the odds and all of that. We felt very comfortable that Francis was going to win the fight, even with the really bad injury. Had not been for the injury, guys, he would have dusted him off way easier. With the injury, we still felt confident enough to know he could still pull out a victory, and that's exactly what happened. That's why the whole camp, go to Francis' YouTube page and see all the videos. After every training session, what did we say? And still.
Facts.
And even the fight day itself, there was so much drama. His manager was also there with you guys, Markel.
Yeah.
The text message, we saw those that he received too, and just the legal threats and stuff like that. The hours before, just getting ready from the hotel room on the bus to the arena. How the hell did you temper all the emotions, all that stuff, and block it off? Walk us through like what you guys were doing to keep so even keel.
We're just built different, you know? And it's at that point, a meteor could have fucking hit the hotel and we would have laughed that shit off.
That's right. That's right.
And we just kept telling ourselves all camp is like, this is only going to make for the better part of the story.
Yes.
This is only going to make the story better, right? Like, we're like, bro, there ain't nothing else now they can throw at us. And then when that happened, honestly, I just kind of giggled. Yeah, like, what else is it, you know?
Yeah,
what else can they throw at us?
It's like the devil is alive, you know? People always want to knock you off the path. And so many people let the obstacles, the adversities, the public opinion sway them. We are titanium, man. We were trying to talk Francis out of fighting. But once he gave us a definitive, I want to fight, we said, we ain't talking about it no more. Let's make it happen.
And the doctor said, like, irreversible damage potentially, too, if you're fighting on this.
For sure. But a proven mind, a confident mind, a for sure mind is hard to stop. And that's what he showed us. All the shit that happened fight day, it don't matter what happens. Nobody gives a fuck about how we feel. Nobody gave a fuck about how Francis felt. It's about what you do in life. Francis could have used every excuse. My knee, I got lawsuits, the UFC's fucking with me the day of my fight. had he lost that fight, what would all of, not you guys, you guys are great people, but most people would have said what? Excuses, excuses, excuses.
Yeah, for sure.
It's not about anything. It's never about how you feel when it comes to these, any sport. It's about what the fuck you do. And so I wasn't stressed at all because Francis had already made us understand that he wasn't pulling out. So it don't matter if the UFC wants to fire him, if World War III breaks out, if as long as the Honda Center don't get blown up, we knew he was fighting.
Yeah,
we fighting. Knew he was fighting Saturday night, and we knew he was winning Saturday night. That's why we didn't panic after round one. We didn't panic after round two. We knew, okay, urgency, it's urgency time. But we didn't panic because I just felt it in my heart. God's plan was on when we walked out. I just felt like, yo, he went in this fight no matter what it took. And that's exactly what happened.
Damn.
I know. I'm getting motivated listening to that. But were you guys surprised afterwards when he won and Dana White didn't come in the octagon to wrap the belt around his waist?
I wasn't. I don't, none of us really care. Like,
yeah.
I think it kind of got made a big deal. And, you know, the backstory, yes, it's because of the things that went on. But none of us cared. I mean, he won, and whatever Dana decides to do, he's a grown man. That's up to him. That's right. To be quite fair, like, none of us really cared. You know, I think he should have done it in looking back, just because I know those guys were trying to mend fences and make things work. But unfortunately, the way the media has spun it, that they think that Dana, you know, was kind of a bad job on his part. None of us cared. You know, we all love Mick Maynard. You know, Mick's great. So yeah. It is what it is. We won. That's all that mattered to us. You know, anybody could have put the belt around him, and fucking we would have been happy no matter what.
Yes, let me piggyback that. The objective was victory, man. Like I said, we didn't give a fuck about nothing else.
Facts.
We didn't care about nothing else. We wanted Francis to be safe as he possibly could because we knew about the ramifications going into the fight, about the irreversible damage and him being on a bum leg, still won on a bum leg, bum knee. Anyway, we didn't care about that. I will say, let me backtrack. I've been knowing Dana White way before this UFC shit started, man. I've been knowing Dana since before the UFC was bought out, you know, when it got sold to the Japanese company, etc. Dana used to be a coach at our gym. We were all at the same gym called United Champions. So Dana White and I have been friends for way before this UFC shit popped off. So at the moment, we were just so thrilled about Francis showing that good old-fashioned wrestling and winning the fight. But when people start talking about it at the post-fight, deep down inside, though, I really don't give a damn. I was a little like, that wasn't cool, Dana. Because I know the real Dana. He ain't some racist dude. He ain't some, you know, whatever people think he is. Dana's normally truly a cool guy. I've known him for a long time. So I was a little disappointed that he wouldn't show up to the post fight. I was a little disappointed that he didn't put the belt around Francis, because Francis did deserve that moment, especially with all the shit that was going on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So deep down inside, slightly, like 5% disappointment. But at the end of the day, the objective was reached. We were victorious. We are still a world champion, a UFC heavyweight world championship winning motherfucking team. I'm proud as hell about that. People can say what the fuck they want to say. We are a championship winning team, defending undisputed world championship winning team in the UFC heavyweight division, man. It don't get no better. So with Dana not showing up, it's okay. But hey, we're happy anyway.
He did give me a hug on his way out. Dana did. Like, on the way, Francis was doing media, I think talking to Megan O'Leary, and he was walking out, coming down the corridor, gave me a handshake and a hug, and he said, hey, good job, kid, man. That was an awesome performance, you know. So for whatever it's worth, you have to be transparent. He did acknowledge me and gave me a hug and say great job and, you know, kept moving on. But, you know, it wasn't like he just cold-shouldered us on the way out either.
No, like, explanation or anything like that?
No, and I didn't ask for one. It was very brief. It was, you know, and look, we understand because we also have a stable of fighters that fight for the UFC. So it's tough for us to be like, I can't slam the UFC for something.
And I was going to say that too.
You know?
This podcast, us, we understand business is business. Every single business has greatness. Everyone has imperfections. We
for
get
sure.
it. But the UFC has done so much for so many fighters
for sure.
around the world. And we totally understand the position everybody's in.
Yeah.
So we get it. We totally understand.
And honestly, from our perspective, and I don't want to speak for Coach, but I know his heart is the same as mine, is like, we just want this to get worked out because we want to compete against the best, and that's in the UFC. So, but Francis has his stances on things, and I hope that they can come to terms and figure this whole thing out because we want to stay with the UFC and we want to compete against the best that they have to offer.
That's right.
Well, us too. We want to see that too, but we'd be stupid if we didn't bring up Tyson Fury. Eventually, we got to get to that too, especially your background.
Good old boxing. You know, we love that boxing. Ain't nothing like a 12-round fight, I can tell you that.
All right, I guess since I just brought it up, we have to stick to that. But, like, if that fight hypothetically were to ever happen, what can make that the fairest level playing field possible for the fans to win, to see everything?
I got it. Let me answer this one. Boxing fight, MMA gloves, but instead of 4 ounce, 8 ounce MMA gloves in a cage. Don't have to be an octagon, has to be a cage. We meet halfway. Instead of a ring, put it in a cage, 8 ounce MMA gloves on, like the puffy ones guys spar in, and make it a boxing fight. But you can clinch. You can clinch.
Okay. So no knees, you can clinch. Straight dirty hands. Boxing? Like
dirty
like,
boxing is okay. Legal. Basically, like the bare knuckle boxing rules, just with 8 ounce MMA gloves in a cage. That way, it's not completely a boxing fight. It's not completely a mixed martial arts fight. It's like somewhere, it's 65-35 boxer. You know what I mean? Because it's still more boxing, because you can't kick knee or take him down. And we'll see if Tyson still has the same energy, if he's willing to exchange punches with a power puncher like Francis Ngannou with those little gloves on. I boxed professionally for a long time. The boxing gloves can save people a little bit. The smaller those gloves get, you know, the realer that shit gets when it comes to getting hit. So I think that would be great. Boxing in the cage, fight zone, my man Jack, make it happen.
Allegiant Stadium.
I love it. Oh, I love it, man.
Huge. Yeah.
That would be unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
So have you talked to Francis about that idea?
Definitely not. We're just happy. First of all, we want to get through this fight because
facts.
Somehow we were an underdog somehow as the champion. Somehow people thought we were fighting the new Anderson Silva as a Frenchman heavyweight or something. You know, this guy that moves like a welterweight and has
that
endurance.
Knee injury came out.
Yes.
That got leaked.
Yeah.
So
the odds changed.
Oh, you and I talked about that, remember? I said, look, watch this. We'll know in Vegas, being a Vegas boy, we know when those lines start to move, that's when the word's out.
Yeah, but you know? but the whole narrative, he moves like a welterweight, has the endurance of a lightweight. We've never seen the likes of anything like this. If I was Francis Ngannou's coaches, I'll start studying this guy right now. We did. We knew it.
But
we
I think they came up with that narrative too, just because of the way he looked against Derek Lewis in Houston.
Yes.
And they just assumed that, you know, that would carry over because obviously.
But don't forget too, like it was what coach Jarzinho and I think his Volkov performance to me was his best performance.
Yes.
But Jarzinho and might have been another one. The narrative that they were running, he was boring. He should have put this guy away sooner. He was playing safe. He was this, he was that.
Yes.
You know, and in my mind, I'm like, we understand as coaches, whatever path to victory that you can do to win and guarantee yourself a paycheck or two paychecks or to move up the rung, because this business, I don't want to say they don't give a fuck about you, but you know you have to win.
Yes.
I don't care how you win, but win. That's all. You know what I'm saying? So, but the Derek Lewis fight, you know, he came out and put that guy away the way that he did. Everybody was like, "Ooh, shit." You know, we're still like, all right, well, yeah, he's good. Don't get me wrong. He's really good, but we're going to figure him out, you know?
Yes. We felt, especially I felt, the Derek Lewis fight, Derek just kind of stood around and just got peppered away and frustrated and psychologically more tired than physically tired, and he broke. He just said, man, it's not my day. We knew our fighter, Francis Ngannou, was going to be a little more elusive, a lot more athletic, and throwing that hot shit back at him. It's different, man. When you in the trenches and them bullets coming back at you, that shit is different. And let me tell you something. I got to say this. I hate to say this, but 4 weeks before the fight actually happened, Francis was looking phenomenal. He was fantastic. He looked good in the gym. He was punching harder than he ever punched, kicking harder than he ever kicked, ran through sicko series like a sicko. It was nothing. Yeah. we said right then, holy shit, Gunn's in big trouble.
New level.
He took it up to another level that he hasn't been. And we were so excited about what was going to happen 4 weeks later. And God knocked us off the pedestal and gave us adversity.
That's right.
But he still did it. But I just wish people would have seen the Francis we see 4 weeks out. He was already at the weight that he was fighting when he fought Stipe 4 weeks from a month from the fight with Gunn. He was already 263. Shit like that. Man, I'm telling you, he was another level. The injury really, really stifled our progress and our momentum for training camp, because who knows what he would have been 10 days before the fight, man. Yeah. He was on an upward trajectory that we had never seen before, and we were freaking out. Holding the pads was punishing.
You know I saw mean? The video.
Let me tell you
where
something.
Where you like flew.
Power, power. It was crazy.
Yeah, that was a great video, by the way. The one she's referring to where you disappeared. It was like 2 days before the fight.
Hey, yeah, Jim Shaw got me. They got me with that one. So many people called me saying, what the fuck, Dewey? What have you become? I said, dude, it's different if it's your fighter deflating you. Yeah. I'll take that.
Yes.
Somebody else, I want to shoot his ass. They put a video of me like that out. But with him, he's okay.
The way the complexity of the camp changed, though, and which is so nice about having a guy like Dewey, is he just quarterbacked the whole thing from there on out. The complexity of the camp changed immediately, and we sat and we just brainstormed, how can we get the techniques, the cardio, and everything in without having the use of the right leg? And we just say, he's like, bro, we're going to have to go to Bones Adams. We're going to have to do bags. We're going to do pad work. We're going to do a lot of pocket stuff. We're going to pummel. We're going to do everything that we can do basically in a phone booth to try to replicate some of the cardio that we're missing out from wrestling and actually sparring. So, I mean, you know, this guy took a fucking beating for 3.5 weeks, man. It was ugly. It was ugly. Crazy. Every time I came into the practice, I was like, I love you, Dewey. Good luck, crazy. Brother.
And here's the thing. It was because we're trying to keep everything covert. So we couldn't invite other sparring partners or nothing. So guess who became the battle ram? Guess who became the sparring partner? The old man. I'm fucking 47 years old. I used to take some good shots, but Francis was punching hard, man. Even when he didn't want to punch hard, he was punching hard. And he's so funny. Francis is so cool. You know, we'd be sparring. We spar like every other day for 3 straight weeks. I was getting the hell beat out of me. And every time I started getting a nice little flow, he hit me to the body hard as hell and
shut
just take
down.
The wind right out of me, the bastard.
Shut it down.
I didn't quit, but trust me, I was at my threshold like, yo, I can't do this shit no more.
He knew how to slow you down.
Man, he was punching me so hard to the body, and then he would just laugh. And I said, I hate you. And we just started punching each other again. It was awesome. I will never forget those last 3 weeks. But remember, I didn't do it because I wanted to. Earlier today, I said, it's not how you feel. It's about what the fuck you do. Mm. We didn't do this shit like that because we wanted to. It's because that's what we had to do.
Yep.
To keep Francis at as much conditioning as he had gathered in the training camp 4 weeks from the fight, we was trying to make him maintain as much as that as he could. That's the only way we could do it. Power drills and sparring, because he couldn't kick, he couldn't move too much. And imagine standing there with that big monster punching on you. It was crazy. But we didn't care. We did what we had to do to try to help him get his victory, help him take his victory. And that's why this was one of my most favorite wins in the world ever, including my fights, all the champions I've trained, boxing, kickboxing, MMA. This victory was, when I closed my eyes, the most exhilarating, because this shit shouldn't even happen, bro. It's crazy. It
I was
even
trying
happen.
To pry that out of Eric before you came, but he had a great poker face. I was going to say, I mean, this has got to be up there at the top, huh?
Yeah, I think under the circumstances and everything that we went through, man, it's a movie. It's a scene from a movie, and we kind of laughed about that.
Yeah.
I'm sure Randy, our film guy, probably has something along those lines. But myself, Coach Dewey, and Markel were pretty adamant that we pulled out of this fight with his experience from the knee injury, from my, like, from an anecdotal place for me, from what I've seen from other fighters and things that I've experienced as a coach. We thought it was probably going to be best that we pulled out under these circumstances. And then it was the Friday before we were going to leave. So it was literally our last Friday practice. We had that come to Jesus in the PI, and I was damn near in tears, huh?
Yeah.
I was like, bro, like, I love you, man. You're our family. This has nothing to do with anything other than the fact that we care.
Yeah.
Like, if we didn't give a shit, we're going to get a paycheck and whatever, we would have been like, go fight. But it's not about that for us. It's about our legacy, yes. And that's what we care the most about.
Yes.
And, you know, I just said to him, I was like, look, as your coaches here, we have to be honest with you. We have to look out for your future. I don't think it's a good idea to fight this fight. But if you tell us tonight that we're going to go fight, I'm never going to bring this shit up again, and we're going to fucking row that boat 100% all the way to victory. You understand that? And he's like, yeah. He goes, I want to go to L.A. I want to meet with this other doctor. And depending on what this doctor says, we'll decide on Tuesday. But we already fucking knew. Once we packed our bags and we were going, I was like, oh, we're scrapping one way or another. It's not going to matter.
And that's what he said. He appeased us because – it was a unanimous decision on our part. Markel, Eric, and I, fight's off. This is Friday. This is exactly 6 days from fight. Like, bro, no. But he said, okay, I still want to fight. I will see the doctor Tuesday, and we will leave it up to the doctor. It won't be up to me. It won't be up to you. We'll leave it up to a third party. Doctor says no. Francis got up and walked out. Hey, Francis, you said something to the doctor. What happened? We ain't fighting, right? Francis was like, fuck that. If Francis was an American brother, he would be like, fuck that, dog. We fight.
he made us sit out. Like, we had to go get lunch, and he went to the doctor by himself. So we weren't even in the room, bro. And then he comes walking out of the doctor's office, and I could just see a smile on his face, and I was sitting in the car, and I had like two margaritas at lunch. I'm like, bro, I need to fucking chill. He came walking out, and I was like, party, huh? And he goes, fuck yeah, Bubba, we're going. I was like,
he didn't
all right,
say though. The doctor said no. He was going.
Yeah, and then later on, I said that. I go, what did the doctor say then? He goes, no.
No, there'll be irreversible damage. You can't fight. I don't agree with this.
Same shit he said fucking 4 days ago, but we're already here anyway, so let's party.
Francis was like, man, he tried to hear that shit. I'm fighting. You know what I mean? He didn't say it like that because he's not American, but that's exactly how he felt about it.
Fuck yeah.
And that's part of the legacy. That's part of the movie right there.
Yeah, yeah, man. I think that is what we talked about, man, is every champion has his defining moment, and they're all not going to be, you know, first round knockouts. They're not all going to be this easy walk in the park. We're going to see adversity. And, you know, the great Randy Couture, man, he told me once we won this title versus Stipe, he called me the next day, maybe even it was that night. And he said, Eric, I'm telling you right now, the hardest fight of your entire career is your first title defense. He goes, cause they're going to try to fucking break the band up. You know, not they, I'm just saying they, right? But like, you know, people,
the machine,
you know, people want to get in. People want this. People want that. You know, lives change with this type of money. Everything starts to change. You guys have to stay true to who you are. And the hardest fight of your career will be the first title defense. Trust me. Once you get over that hump, then you get the momentum going again. And you understand the target's on your back and everybody's gunning for you.
And think about that. Randy was completely correct, because how all of a sudden this storybook adversary pulls up from your original gym, your original coach, bad blood, a guy who you didn't spar a million times, a guy who they claim then beat you in the gym and did this and did that. I mean, who could have got a more feasible opponent to dethrone him? I'm thinking out of everyone for our first title defense, it's got to be someone and from the same exact environment you're from, who supposedly knows everything about you. And I mean, it couldn't get more crazy than that.
And the French media were wild. Press conference.
You were there, right?
Yeah, it was wild. Yeah. The question about, you said this. No, you didn't say that. And I loved how Francis stood his ground and he called the guy out, putting words in his mouth.
Yeah.
Hey, yo, that was great. By the way, Francis, I'm going to still call him Johnny Cochran, boy. If it don't fit, you must have quit.
Yeah.
He was killing it at those media interviews, man. Yeah. You know, they were throwing all that shit at him, boy. Francis, he was bulletproof. He was like a goddamn attorney the way he was rebuttaling those questions. Facts. I was sitting there like, holy shit, man, Francis, that's Johnny Cochran up there, man.
Hey. I saw you mentioned Stipe's coaches reached out to congratulate you. Yeah. That's fucking awesome, too.
Oh, yeah, man. Like, those guys have been such good people for years. I mean, you
got to
think.
Stipe used to go to this gym and train all the time, so he got the inside with the guys anyway.
When Stipe, obviously before Francis, is involved in the landscape, and you know, anytime Stipe was in town, he would come to the gym, and Coach Marinelli and Al and Coach Bobby, you know, we would see these guys on the road for years on end, man. They're just good, solid people. Yeah. And I think it just shows a little bit about the camaraderie and the coaching fraternity that I think we have. But, bro, like, I think we're respected as coaches, you know? We're not fucking assholes. Yeah. We're not trying to, you know, make people look like shit or talk shit. We got our win. We celebrated for a day, and we're fucking right back to work. Yes. That's what it's about. But I thought it was super cool that those guys took the time to reach out.
Yeah, very cool.
And now you're on top of the mountain. He's got to recover. He's got to get surgery and stuff like that. We're talking about legacy. Like, I know you and I have talked a lot about, you know, what you want to see down the road. And, you know, John Jones, that's all coming up and everything like that. But obviously all those conversations and talks have kind of all gone astray to a certain point where Francis has got annoyed with the narrative. He's not going to wait for John Jones and wait for anything like that. We're not going to take away from the celebration. A lot can change a year from now, but can you see a situation if Francis, let's assume he's back in the UFC, is there any logical name at the top that's not named John Jones or Stipe Miocic for a trilogy?
I think that's really it, right, Coach?
Stipe for sure.
Yeah.
Or John Jones, just because of the name value and the stock and the greatness of John Jones. But a lot of people made great points. John Jones hasn't looked stellar in his last few fights. So.
And he hasn't fought since, what, February of 2020? You know, so I think there's a lot of questions. Yeah, Dominic Reyes. So I think there's a lot of questions there too. Yeah. But you know, his resume speaks for itself. Yes. Even if he hasn't fought in 5 years, it doesn't matter. He's still one of the pound for pound goats. So yes, if you were to ask us what we want, obviously I think boxing is going to be up there for him to secure the bag, because the way I look at it too, and like Markel made a great point. He goes, John Jones is on our timetable now. We waited for him. We were told after we beat Stipe, it's John Jones. Okay, so me and him are in the fucking lab breaking film down and doing whatever we have to do and get going. And this ball just never got going, you know? Then it was going to be Derek Lewis in September. Oh, wait, back up. We're going to do August, Derek Lewis, Cyril gone for a fucking interim. Okay, now you're going to fight the winner of this. So, I mean, I'm not saying it's our fault or their fault or anything else. I'm just talking fucking facts. This is the way this shit went down. So, you know, whatever comes down the pipe, he's got a knee injury he's going to have to deal with. You know, him and Markel will sit down and get this whole thing figured out. I'm confident, man, we're going to be fighting for the UFC. I am. I'm just confident. I think that they're going to figure this thing out, get to the terms that they want to be at. And, you know, we want to compete against the best. I want to see this motherfucker come up with a game plan to beat Tyson Fury or Deontay Wilder, somebody, you know, and let him go make all the money that he wants to make. And then we'll come back and we'll fucking take care of John.
Especially since it's been done before. It's been done before.
Connor did it.
We've seen Connor and Floyd. So why can't we see Francis and Fury? You know what I mean? It sounds better, actually. Francis and Fury.
Legion Stadium.
Yeah, bro. I was down on the field with Brad. We were doing the flag ceremony with Tavares. And I looked over at Brad. Like, we're on the field for the playoffs, you know? I looked at Brad. I was like, hey, we're going to get a fucking fight here. I can feel it, bro. Like, look at this place. This is electric.
We have Max Crosby in here quite a few times. I love the guy. He's one of the best.
Yeah.
And I know you're a big football guy, too. That's your background. For the people that don't know, you're a football guy.
Football guy. Yeah.
Full circle, man.
Full circle.
Yeah, but I will say, whatever happens next, that I'm deeply proud of Francis. Whether he fights in UFC ever again or not, hey, man, this last one was very, very deep for me. I'll never forget it. We said when we won the belt from Stipe right here in Vegas, we said, what are we doing? We're going to Disneyland.
And guess sure what? Did.
We manifested it. We went to Disneyland and we conquered that shit last Saturday night, January 22nd. So we won the belt. We said we want to go to Disneyland. Our first title defense was in fucking Disneyland.
Wow. I think it's a little too big to get on the rides there, though.
Yeah, you ain't lying.
Yeah.
There's like a weight limit and shit,
there's
right?
There's gotta be.
He'd get his own boat. He'd be going through a little.
Not tall enough to ride these rides. How about too big?
Yeah, he sinks the boat and it's a small world, right?
Yes, exactly. Boxing, MMA, whatever he wants to do, man. I'm really proud of him. He's standing up for what he feels. The only thing I can really compare it to, but not on such a deep scale, was back in the 60s, man, Muhammad Ali. You know what I mean? Sometimes sports figures have to rise above just their sport and do what's good for humanity, what's good for people, what's good for not just the elite. And, you know, I feel like Francis, a lot of what he's doing is for that calling, man. Sometimes we have to stand our ground and fight for what the fuck we believe in. And I got love for UFC. Like I said, I've been friends with Dana White since before this UFC shit popped off. But at the end of the day, man, when a man feels something in his heart and his soul, he should represent it to the end. So I don't give a fuck if Francis never fight again. That's up to him. But we're with him and we support him 100%, whatever he decides to do. But he's a talented guy. He's a very smart guy. And we care about him so much. And we want him to know that whatever you do, whatever you decide to fight, whoever, whenever, you know, your team is 100% with you.
Yeah, because he is the baddest man on the planet. He's proven it. He's shown it. But an interesting thing about it, too, is it's not just about the money to him. He says it's about the respect. 100%. It's about that. Like, it's going to be interesting to see how that all plays out. Like, at the end of the day, he's got to be happy. But what is going to make him happy? And what are is the other side willing to do to accommodate to that? You got to meet in the middle and anywhere. Someone's got to give. People, both sides have to give, and you got to find a middle ground. But
good old Mexican standoff.
100%. But winning cures everything. Winning puts the position, puts you in that driver's seat. And I feel like at least at this point in time right now, more so than any time in his UFC career, he has something. He has leverage that he never had before.
The old Jerry Maguire moment.
That's right. And and for people who are thinking that we fabricated a built-in excuse just in case Francis didn't win, we got some rare footage. Whenever Francis decided to release the after injury footage, the whole world's gonna have a whole new respect for this man's name.
Yeah.
When you see him standing there with a brace on his leg and can't move and still training, still sparring, still getting hit, still hitting back, when you see this type of shit, it's going to really inspire millions of people to know.
Me freaking the fuck out.
To know, no matter what the fuck I'm going through, I can still do this. Yeah. This was deeper than a fight, man. I'm trying to tell you. So, again, that's up to him and Randy, all that. But when they release this footage, the world's going to be compelled. If you guys were compelled about him talking in the corner and me talking in the corner, the shit we got on video, the shit he got on video.
Real life.
Wow. Even the discussion he talked about Friday before the fight, that's on video. He was recording you whether you knew it or not. He was recording us.
Yeah. I want to see.
You see that footage, speech. It's going
to
change the world.
I want to see the locker room talk, hours, moments leading up to the fight. I can't wait for that.
We're mellow in the locker room. Like, we're real
it's
mellow.
It's my thing. We knew what was going to happen. This was no surprise for us,
like,
man.
We're mellow, man. Like, we're so mellow. And we knew what was going to happen. We feed off of him. Like, Francis isn't like a big, like, all right, we're going to do that. You know, like, hey, a lot of that stuff for me and him is just kind of a look and a head nod and a handshake and an eye, you know, because you'll know what your fighter needs, and you'll know if they need to be like revved up or, you know, this Newt Rockne speech 100%. Or something. He doesn't need a lot of that stuff. He just needs to know that he's safe, that he's secure, his team has his back. And that's a vibe. That's an energy. You know, I, on the night of dinner, we did a little toast. And somebody had asked me earlier that day in a press conference, they're like, well, what makes this family so great? And I didn't really have the right words to say. I didn't understand how to articulate it. And then it hit me at dinner. I was like, there's no words to explain this family. You have to be a part of it to understand it. You have to be in this family to understand what makes us so great and what makes us tick. And, you know, and that's just it. We know what each and every one of us needs, not just Francis alone. You know, we're a tight unit, man. We protect each other from neck to thigh.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We can hold the shield. We can hold the shield.
Well, it's not red panty night, but it's red pants night, underpants, sheath underwear. Yay! I wanted to give you guys some underwear. Sponsor the podcast.
Okay. I'll put them on right now.
20% off sheathunderwear.com. Robert Patton. I think he's worked with Donald Cerrone, a bunch of fighters and stuff like that. Iraq War veteran. Separates the balls from the shaft. I just figured it'd be a good gift. Celebrate red underwear night.
You got Dewey a triple XL?
Yeah.
We do have triple XL if we need to.
The fuck is this?
Extra small. Check it out. Promo code SHMO, 20% off sheathunderwear.com. But yeah, I also, I know we've dominated the conversation on Francis. There's so many other fighters that you guys talk about too. One guy in particular, I just want to bring up.
Yeah.
Because he's February 5th. He's headlining the fight against Jack Hermanson.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Sean Strickland, he's in the gym a lot. I know he spars a lot with the heavyweights too.
Oh yeah.
But he hasn't been in the gym the past couple of days at Extreme. He's been in California. He's a nomad. He goes everywhere he gets in work.
Yeah, so you remember like I was in California for a couple of days. So him and I were in communication the whole time I was in Cali. I actually brought gear and pads. But Sean kind of reminds me of, like, I don't want to say like Floyd Mayweather, but like the same style where Floyd might say like, oh, today I want to spar 5 rounds. Today I only want to spar 1 round, but I want to wrestle. I want to do this. It's kind of the feeling of how the day and the camp's going. So, and he'll check in with me, be like, Coach, what do you think about X, Y, and Z? I'm like, hey, man, you haven't done this in a few days, or we need to do some of this. But the feedback, the bounce back and forth has been really, really good. Dude, I fucking love the guy. And I know that he comes off a certain way. But I'm talking about his competition and the way that he brings the best out of people in the room. You know, we're old school, so he goes hard. But he like Jay Haran told him one day, Jay's like, bro, I had you back fucking 10 years ago when I was fighting, because he fit that mold of what Extreme Couture once was. Now, we gotten smarter, right, over time, but Sean is a fucking throwback. You know, my boy is a Navy SEAL, calls him a straight meat eater. That motherfucker's a meat eater. I'm like, yes, he is. And you need that. You need those personalities in the gym, because when you boil down who and what Sean Strickland really is, he just wants to see the people around him get better and succeed. His delivery is what you're going, this guy's an asshole. Yeah, you know what? He is, but he's an asshole because he sees more out of you. You know?
Yeah, and just outside looking in, you know, I actually got a lot of love for Sean, because I like real dudes. I love his conversation. If Master One Kick Nick was young, that's Sean Strickland.
Yeah.
Sean Strickland is like a young version of Nick Blumgren. It's so funny to me the way he talks. He'll be sparring someone and they'll start weakening up because he hit him hard. And he'll start saying, don't quit on me now, boy. Don't quit on yourself. You know, like, he's like a crazy biker, Viking, crazy dude who's awesome, because I love him because he's 100% transparent.
Yeah.
He ain't got no punk shit. He ain't talking behind your back.
Yeah.
He's saying it right to you. He's
saying it right to you while he's fighting you.
Yeah, right to you while you're fighting
him. While he's fighting you. And you can't get any better than that. If someone don't like me, I'd rather them tell me that when we're sparring so I could go do my best to try to hurt them.
Yeah.
And that's what I respect about Sean. He's so old school. He's so throwback, man. He's so 1960s, 1950s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s. He fits
the UFC tagline, as real as it gets.
Yes,
is as real as it gets.
I will say it. I just sit and watch him spar. He's just walking up to people, beating them up. He's not even fighting. He's literally just walking up to them, punching them and kicking them.
Yeah.
I'm like, these dudes just get beat up all over the place. And he's talking to them while he's doing it.
It's insane.
It's crazy to me. But yeah, he's definitely... I really enjoy being around Sean, because he says and I've seen the interviews he's done with you guys. He says the craziest, coolest shit ever.
Best.
I don't know how he even thinks
interview of the year.
Oh, bro. And all it's I can best. Say bro. Is it's just got to be the way he thinks. You can't think of shit that quick on the spot the way he does. He's just saying how he feels.
I love it too. But just it tells you what kind of teammate he is too. Just watch the Action Man, Chris Curtis, who trains there too, and how proud. There's no one in the room more proud of him, the Action Man, than Sean Strickland.
100%.
Especially those past couple of fights, he's just been a dog every single time he's been fighting in the UFC. Yep. And now look at the position that the Action Man's 100%,
man. And like, I think for me, you know, obviously winning MMA Junkie Gym of the Year, the things that resonated with me the most are the people's lives that we changed within that year, right? The awards, the accolades, meaning the titles and all that stuff, that's going to obviously bring shine to the gym. But for me as a coach, whose lives have we actually changed throughout the year? Whose life was the better? And that was Taylor Guardado. You know, that was Chris Curtis. That was Casey O'Neill. You know, the people in the room, that Cheyenne Velismus. Those lives changed, man, throughout the year. And I think that's a testament to the coaches and the gym and the people that we surround ourselves with. Yes. That's what you get into the sport for, bro, is to really hopefully change people's lives for the better.
Damn. Well said.
Yeah. And Chris Curtis, I believe I saw he has a new fight booked, right?
Yeah. the guy from South Africa. I'm gonna butcher his name.
Yeah,
Dia Police. He's a real deal, man. This kid's good.
Yes,
this kid's good. So we got a really good fight on our hands, and that's gonna be in Florida, I think, in April. So we're gonna meet actually tomorrow. We'll go to lunch and we'll sit down and put pen to paper and start breaking down the game plan.
What'd you make of when you found out that Korean Zombie was getting the title shot against Volkanovski? And then you think about it, because his last win was against Ige. And then if Ige got that fight, then he'd be in position, arguably, to be getting the featherweight title shot.
Yeah, so for my perspective on the Ige side of things, this is something beautiful that we can lean on for Dan. Yeah. It's like, man, like, you know, I felt like we won the Josh Emmett fight. By no means did I feel it was a robbery. But there's little things aesthetically we need to do better. And then the same thing in the Calvin Kattar fight, the same thing in the Korean Zombie fight. But this to me is like going to fucking college and getting reps with some of the best in the world, top five in the world. That's only going to make Dan better. And then don't forget now, when Korean Zombie, when he beat, he lost to Ortega. But the fight before that, it was like, holy shit. And then he comes in to fight Ortega, favorite. Right, Ortega comes out and puts a clinic on him, and then everybody fucking thinks Zombie's just he's not as good as what we thought he was. It's such recency.
That's what
bias.
Happened with Calvin Kattar recently.
That's why
too.
We all made a lot of fucking money, of fucking money. And I like Giga. I think Giga's great, but I just thought stylistically and not that Giga couldn't win that fight. I'm talking value. When I saw the number on Calvin, I'm like, this motherfucker's a 2-1, bro. I know Tyson. I know that camp. I know what he did and set a year out. Everything they put together, I'm like, well, there's value on Calvin Kattar, bro. There's value there. We'll take that value.
The way he fought
and
in the pocket.
Experience
and
he learned from Max Holloway. The experience he learned. A loss is definitely a good thing if you really develop and learn from that. And Calvin's a perfect example of that.
Yeah, exactly. So
came
out
quicker. Wasn't start off with that slow Muay Thai build as the rounds go. He got great knowledge from that Max Holloway fight, and he showed it. And he looks spectacular.
So I think it shows that if you're in that top five in any weight division, right, when he got the call with Kevin to go fight Tony Ferguson, Kevin was five, I believe, yeah?
Yes. Yep.
So, I mean, you have to understand that coming off of a good win or a good performance and you're fresh and you're ready to go, that ball can be in your court at any point, at any time. And it's just proven again with Korean Zombie. Max falls out. Okay, who's next up? They're going down the list. Everybody's throwing their name in the hat. Okay, Korean Zombie, he came off of a good win against Dan Ige. Let's give him a shot. So my point is that should give hope to all these guys that are in that pecking order is, dude, you better be in fucking shape and be ready to go, because that phone might ring and you might be sitting at home eating ho-hos and drinking beers and you're not ready. You know, and the Jay Haran always pound that on our head, like, you know, stay ready so you don't have to get ready.
That's right.
And you just brought him up, Kevin Lee. I know he just signed with Eagle FC, and he told us he moved to Florida, right?
Yeah,
recently.
Yes.
All, I mean, by our blessings, and you know, I think it's a great move for him. To be honest with you, I think that you know, myself, Coach Dewey, everybody here in Vegas, we did everything we can for him, and at some point he has to listen and be receptive to the help that he's getting. You know, Coach Eddie, I mean, he's. Here's the thing is, sometimes we'll put game plans together, we'll do things, and Kevin will get away from those things, you know, and he'll tell you that. He'll say, like, fuck, I didn't listen there. I didn't do what I was supposed to do. So for us, and I don't want to speak for Coach Dewey, but I know his heart too, is we just want to see him win. We want to see him successful. We don't care who's cornering him. And then Henry called me a few weeks ago, and we FaceTimed, and he just wanted to know, like, is he leaving on bad terms? Like, what's going on there? We're like, no, like, we want him to be successful. And if he's going to go anywhere, I'm glad it's with Coach Henry. He's a guy that I look up to and I consider a good friend, and, you know, Greg Jones and all those guys out there. So he's gonna be fine out there. I think he's going to do a great job.
Yeah, and Kevin, you know, we talk all the time. He messaged me right after the Francis win and has such a great text message. And I love Kevin. You know, I've been with Kevin since basically the beginning of his UFC career. I love Kevin. But I always told Kevin, whatever you need to make you feel confident, feel, you know, reinvigorated, whatever you need, I support it 100%, whether it's with me or without me. That's when the whole Faraz thing happened. You know, he was in Canada. Me and Faraz are very cool. I've never been the type that try to hold someone back who feels they need to go get something. And by the way, the same thing he talked about with Francis about most coaches would have been saying, no, take the fight so we get paid. We were the ones telling him, don't take the fight. It's not good. We'll just bite the bullet on the money. We need you to be at your best. We need you to be successful. Francis decided to fight anyway, and it worked out for us. But we were the ones saying, you know, fuck our pockets. We want this legacy. We want these victories. The more wins we get, the better. So it's the same thing with Kevin. It's like, whatever you need to do to make yourself win, we love you as a brother, not just as some guy we trained. So no hard feelings. And we talked, him and I talked about that. We had a great conversation. I'm completely comfortable. I even talked to Henry in the restroom with Francis. We're warming Francis up about Kevin going
best
over there.
Restroom.
Yeah, we just happened to be washing our hands next to each other. And so I talked to Henry, and Henry's like, yeah, you know, I know he loves you and respects you, Dewey, all of that stuff. So we commend Kevin, and we want the best for him. And I told him, you know, our door is always open. You in Vegas, holler at your boy, because when I'm in Miami, I'm going to definitely holler at you.
Oh, we'll still stay in contact.
Yeah,
and we
support and love him, so it's just
things. I will be dropping all that sparring footage of Kevin once he leaves, though.
But it's one of those things, so it wasn't any kind of breakup or people getting fired and all of this. It was just a transition.
Yeah, it's all love, man.
Sometimes love. It is breakups and bad blood, like you guys seen with Francis and his ex-coach. But with the Kevin situation, completely nothing like that. It was simply a transition. Things are going on in his life. He wants to, you know, Miami. When you go to Miami, who wouldn't want to live in Miami? You know what I mean? So it's one of those things that's good for him. The company's in Miami, so why not? And we support his decisions 100%.
You just brought up his old – I didn't want to bring back Francis up, but I think that's a really good question I want to ask you guys. So if you can remember a couple years ago when Francis left the team and he came over to Vegas,
yes.
What was that transition like? Like, walk us through, like, the mental state of where Francis was at then to where he is now on top of the mountain, the reigning, defending heavyweight champion of the world.
Well, it's funny. Remember, I didn't really understand this until recently, honestly. Because when Francis first came here, him and I had a huge language barrier. He met me at the TMT gym. He said he wanted to train. I thought he said a certain day. He didn't. We were. It was bad. Like the first week, we didn't understand each other. We're getting schedules twisted up. Anyway, I trained him about 6 straight months. It was just him and I. And I was telling him way back then, I was the first person to say, go to Couture's. They got heavyweight wrestlers over there. They got a great wrestling program, and that's what we need. He decided to do some training at Syndicate. We love John Woods and all of that, but I was like, Couture's, because they got Vinny, they got Eric, they got plenty of goddamn heavyweights for you to grapple with, because I definitely can't do it. You know what I mean? But he didn't want to do any of that. He just wanted to be at the PI by himself, and we trained for months. Originally, we were supposed to fight JDS way back then, the fight in Canada. The fight got canceled. We ended up getting the Overeem fight, and the rest was history. You know, he took Overeem's head off.
I've never seen
I was training with him that whole time. We used to go to the park and Summerlin on the weekends and train there and on the soccer field. And then we go to Mount Charleston and run. And I really didn't understand Francis because I didn't know the magnitude of what was going on in France. Fernand Lopez would come here, but they always spoke French. So I had no idea. Sometimes they may have not been on the same page. I just thought they were speaking French. I never felt any kind of
animosity,
issues, like arguments, hostility, anything. They're speaking French. I don't know. So it was so weird to me when I finally got to truly know Francis and figured out that he was just basically closed off to the world.
Yeah.
Forrest Griffin, Stephen Bunner all recommended him to train with me when he said he was coming to Vegas. They said, we got the perfect guy. K-1 fighter, kickboxer, he's strong. He's probably the only guy that can handle your power as far as holding pads and shit for you. So that's how I got the gig. You know, I'm in the boxing also, so it was a good thing for Francis. Anyway, I never could figure out why he didn't want to go other places. It was just because he was you know, probably in a bad situation or the situation going a little south, and he just didn't want to bring other people in. Later on, we found out that's exactly what it was. He stopped trusting a lot of people. Mm. He didn't want to get into the same type of situation he was in at the previous gym. And you know, it's pretty sad because people do that all the time. And even a big, strong dude like him, you just kind of feel like, man, I can't find my team. I can't find people who supports me just for me, not for some ulterior motive. In his mind, I'm not saying that's what Fernand was doing, but in his mind, he felt like he needed someone to really be there for him. And that's what he has now. And he said that the other day. Remember, he told us that I got a team that really cares about me now. And that's so weird to me because I was training him for years that whole time. I never knew he felt this way at all.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I think our relationship had to be very organic. And it took a lot of time for him to build that trust, especially with me.
Yeah, trust.
You know,
trust.
And he moved to Vegas 2018, I believe, and he fought Stipe, didn't have really a gym in Vegas. He had the PI, and then he was going back and forth, I think, to France, and I don't think he had much going on there. Obviously lost that fight, Derek Lewis fight. I think he did most over at Syndicate.
Yes.
And then after that, he started training more with the team over at Extreme Couture, Curtis Blades too. That was when he really set foot in Extreme Couture and like, okay, I'm committed to training. And then Markel Martin reached out to me for the Cain Velasquez fight and said, hey, I think that I would, you know, would you be interested in coaching Francis? And at the time, I mean, we were friends. We knew each other. He has been training with us, but we didn't have that emotional connection quite yet. And I said, well, I don't know if it's, the timing is right now. And then I think Ferdinand coached him for the Gone fight. And then it was after that, they invited me to corner with him in the JDS fight, and we did. And after that, he said, after the fight, he's like, I've been testing you. I was like, what do you mean you've been testing me? Like, what does that mean? He's like, you have a pure heart, you care, like, I want you to be a part of this whole thing. So and then for myself and Francis, our bond became a lot closer during the pandemic, right? We were friends, we were close, I cornered him, but we went through a whole camp with Jarzinho. And then we were about a week out before we were supposed to leave, and the, you know, pandemic hit in March. And then that's when I think him and I became the family that we are now today. You know, it was the dinners and the time over at the house and getting to know my kids and, you know, knowing my wife and my mom and my family and stuff like that, that really made all of us tighter, made of all of us closer. Because at one point in the gym, it was literally me, Dewey, Francis, and the walls, bro. It was no one else in there but us and Sweat Equity. Yep. So, and I think that's when you see that moment in round five. That moment in round five is fucking earned. It was fucking earned, bro. It was no bullshit. Yes. It was nothing else, man, because he felt that. And we all, hey, motherfucker, we got this. And he knew it. He knew we had it.
Yes, yes. And so to a lot of people listening to this, and I'm definitely accused of this, make sure when you're relating to people, make sure you do your best to examine them and make sure they're okay, because it's crazy, man. Like, I'm such a fight guy and strong, and I look at Francis like he's strong. I never even realized something dismal was going on, because all I cared about was him the moment we're training, pushing. So I learned a valuable lesson from that, because when I start hearing about the chaos, I'm like, what the fuck? I was there. Didn't feel a thing. Insane. Crazy. Because I'm so focused on victory and fighting and what we got to do. So, you know, definitely anyone out there listening, definitely be focused on what you got to do. But be more like Eric and look for signs of there may be an issue.
Yeah, there's says a lot just about the surroundings, you know what I mean? And we're going to feed off the closest five people that we're around, and, you know, and we tend to bring each other up. We like to compete, we like to talk shit. Yes. You know, we love it. We're just a family, you know. And we were talking one day, I did a thing last week, and they wanted us to describe kind of like what the team does, and I elaborated to the movie 300. When, you know, the guy in the goat path with the hump and he shows his thrust, but he couldn't lift the shield. and that breaks the phalanx. You have to be able to protect the guy to your left from the neck to the thigh. And if you can't protect that guy, then you can't be part of this team, man.
Yep, 100%. 100%. That's the mic drop.
That definitely. Yeah. That is a damn good note to end on. You guys are fantastic. Fucking fantastic podcast guests. Dynamic duo together.
Thank you. And by the way, I'm glad the world's seen us do our thing in our corner, in the corner. But we've been doing this shit a long time. We ain't new to this. God damn it.
Well, you were just on the podcast a couple weeks ago, man. The audience isn't new to you here.
We ain't new to this.
And you were on the old when we were at the old location.
Yeah, but
so.
I've been out on a couple times.
Yeah. For sure. Times. We really appreciate you guys coming on the Schmo Zone.
Yeah, my pleasure.
I mean, victory lap right here, victory weep. Episode 92 of the Schmo Zone podcast.
Woo! The Reggie White episode.
Reggie White, sir. One of the greatest to ever do it.
Right.
Yes.
Better as a Packer or an Eagle?
I gotta go Eagle, bro.
Eagle.
I'm a Bears fan, so I would definitely say Eagles.
Eagles, yeah.
Yeah.
We are out.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.